Hello there. Today is Tuesday, June the 14th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, in the terror attack aftermath, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump give dueling terrorism speeches. The FBI director talks about its past interactions with the Orlando, Florida shooter. What the government says it's doing to prevent this from happening again. And the father of that gunman is speaking out.
I'm really sad and mad, and I share your pain.
Also ahead, how the stock markets reacted to what has been happening in Orlando. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, a day after the deadliest mass shooting in American history left 49 people dead and 53 others wounded, some gravely, President Barack Obama said Monday there is no clear evidence that the shooter who carried out the mass killing at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida, was directed by an overseas terrorist group.
This is being treated as a terrorist investigation. It appears that the shooter was inspired by various extremist information that was disseminated over the internet.
And we are learning that the shooter, Omar Mateen, was questioned by the FBI twice between 2013 and 2014. But after months of investigation, there was no evidence of terror activity and no reason to arrest him. FBI Director James Comey defended his agency and promised a full review.
We're also going to look hard at our own work to see whether there is something we should have done differently. So far, the honest answer is, I don't think so. I don't see anything in reviewing our work that our agents should have done differently, but we'll look at it in an open and honest way and be transparent about it.
Well, as Mateen carried out his middle-of-the-night massacre at the Pulse Bar and Dance Club, he had called 911 and proclaimed his allegiance to the Islamic State group. But his father, Sadiq Mateen, doesn't believe his son was radicalized.
He surprised me, because I didn't see anything irregular with him.
Mateen says he does share the heartbreak of all Americans.
And I want to tell everybody out there that I'm really sorry. That's what happened, and I'm really sad and mad, and I share your pain.
Muslims in the United States are condemning the attack. VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dawkins is with us. Pam, are Muslim Americans concerned about increased anti-Islam sentiments?
It appears there is some concern, especially in response to Trump's remarks. The Republican presidential nominee repeated his call for a temporary ban on Muslim migration to the United States as a result of Sunday's massacre. It turns out that this has drawn some concern, especially from the Council of American Islamic Relations. I spoke to Ibrahim Hooper there today, and he said that whenever there is a situation where allies, U.S. allies, are concerned about possible reckless behavior, if someone gets into the White House, there is concern that this could harm U.S. relations with the rest of the world. But he also said the U.S. government is doing what it can to mitigate damage from what he called a well-coordinated, well-financed campaign of Islamophobia. But he added that there is only so much that could be done.
Right, and this shooter committed this horrific act in the name of Islam.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's an issue that the State Department has been trying to address today. Earlier today, Secretary of State Kerry said the worst thing that could be done in a situation like this is to engage in what he called trying to point fingers at one group or one form of sectarianism or one division. He said there was a need to bring people together to try to prevent this kind of hate and terrorism. And later I got a comment from Sharik Zafar, the State Department's special representative to Muslim communities, and he said that while representing the United States overseas, he had often been asked about American attitudes and perceptions of anti-Muslim behavior, and he said he usually responded by acknowledging that while bigotry and discrimination are unfortunate occurrences in every corner of the globe, including the United States, such intolerance does not accurately reflect U.S. principles. Most nations do appear to be supportive in the wake of Sunday's mass shooting. State Department spokesman Mark Toner said that over 50 countries and leaders had offered condolences to the U.S. in the wake of Sunday's attack.
Now, has the State Department responded at all to presumptive Republican nominee Donald Trump's call for ban of Muslims entry into the U.S.?
Now, the State Department, generally speaking, tries to stay out of the political fray. But in general, it does talk about efforts that are underway to address bigotry, to address any form of what is perceived as discriminatory behavior that singles out a particular religious group. There were, of course, some comments from Trump's rival, Hillary Clinton, and from her political leaders who called the Trump comments politics.
Well, the massacre is dominating the topic on social media today. VOA social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is with us. Hi, G.
Hey, Lori.
So let's begin with what are the trending hashtags?
Sure. Hashtag Pray for Orlando was most popular immediately after the incident, but people are using hashtag Orlando United even more at this hour. There's also a new hashtag called hashtag Two Men Kissing. Tweets that use the hashtag share photos of two men kissing, that's no-brainer, to show the tenacity of the gay community. There's also hashtag two women kissing.
Oh, I'll have to check that out for sure. Gee, the attack, of course, stirring up a lot of debate on immigration and religious extremism. Mm-hmm. What are the presidential contenders tweeting about?
Lori, as many of our listeners and you already know, Donald Trump has been a staunch supporter of tougher immigration laws, especially against certain demographics. And after the incident, he sent out a string of tweets to argue for that policy change. And let's check out a couple of those. Here's one. Is President Obama going to finally mention the words radical Islamic terrorism? If he doesn't, he should immediately resign in disgrace. This is in reference to the shooter's allegiance to ISIL. Trump also tweeted, I've been hitting Obama and crooked Hillary hard on not using the term radical Islamic terror. Hillary just broke, said she would now use a term. Hillary Clinton, who is the presumptive Democratic nominee, differed quite drastically from Trump on this issue. She tweeted, our diversity isn't a liability in the fight against terrorism. It's an asset. It makes us stronger. Within an hour, more than 5,000 people liked that tweet.
So, gee, the faith of the shooter seems to be a big part of the discussion. What mm-hmm. are religious leaders saying about it?
On the night of the incident, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, Pope Francis, sent out this tweet. Do not tire of asking in prayer for the Lord's help, especially in difficulty. But it's unclear whether that message is targeted to a specific group. Lori, back to you.
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. Here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. The Orlando shooting revives the gun debate in America. Thousands flee Fallujah as Iraq's army secures a safe exit. The U.S. continues to lead in terms of weapons exports. And Bernie Sanders will meet with Hillary Clinton after the last Democratic contest today. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. International Edition continues with our coverage of the terror attack in Orlando, Florida. VOA's Susan Yackey talked to our national security correspondent, Jeff Selden, about what the government is doing to prevent this type of massacre from happening in the future.
Well, this is one of the big concerns that the U.S. government has had ever since the September 11th, 2001 attack. And in fact, you have the creation of a whole department, the Department of Homeland Security, to make sure that the different law enforcement and intelligence agencies within the U.S. were connecting the dots, talking to each other, so that potential terrorists didn't fall through the cracks. By and far, it's been pretty successful, given the number of arrests that have been made, the number of plots that you never hear about come to fruition, because they don't. Still, it's difficult, even in the case of the Orlando shooting, the attack over the weekend that killed about 50 people, injured almost another 50. The shooter, Omar Mateen, was interviewed at least twice, possibly three times by the FBI. So it's a very difficult thing. And again, the concern is that, especially with this concept of a lone wolf, somebody who is angry, maybe sympathizes with the views of a terrorist group, they can go online. And Islamic State has really exploited this pretty well, not just in the U.S., but all over to gain foreign fighters and to inspire attacks.
I've heard that the cybersecurity policies are pretty good in the United States as far as trying to use social media to track down these organizations and individuals that might be causing trouble.
The cybersecurity has been more and more of a priority. And again, if you talk to intelligence officials, law enforcement officials, the concern isn't so much just negating the technology. You can shut down one avenue to disseminate this stuff on social media, the propaganda that groups like Islamic State use, but they just find another because there's so much out there. And it's tough to have visibility of everything that's going on because there are so many forums, there are so many ways, so many accounts that can be created on social media. And so what you hear them talk about more than just shutting down the message, which is important, is fighting the ideology. And you even hear military officials talk about this too, as they talk about defeating Islamic State and destroying the self-declared caliphate in Iraq and Syria. They all say it's a matter of fighting the ideology. And they also say that, in part, to fight the ideology, you have to fight the conditions that allow that type of ideology, that type of anger, that type of fear, that all creates the conditions for somebody to embrace terrorist theology. You have to take on those causes. You have to fight that as well. And it's not easy. And again, all it really takes, if somebody's angry enough, and they have the means to acquire the weapons, they can go ahead and they can try to conduct an attack. A lot of times with lone wolves, there are people who have not been on the radar. In the case of the Orlando shooting, the Orlando terror attack over the weekend, it seems that what makes it stand out a little bit is that the suspect is somebody who was on the radar, who had been interviewed by the FBI. But even then, it's that fine line of whether there's something actionable that law enforcement can do or whether they're just monitoring somebody and talking to somebody who's had leanings that worry them.
You can get continued updates on the story at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on VOAnews.com and the Voice of America.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
International Edition continues. The massacre in Orlando, Florida, and what it means for national security is taking center stage in the presidential campaign. In a foreign policy speech in Manchester, New Hampshire, Donald Trump on Monday blasted President Obama and Hillary Clinton for how they've handled terrorism and called for an overhaul of the nation's immigration system.
We cannot continue to allow thousands upon thousands of people to pour into our country, many of whom have the same thought process as this savage killer.
In a speech of her own an hour earlier, presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton didn't mention Trump by name, but she did note that then-Republican President George W. Bush traveled to a Muslim community center 6 days after the September 11th terrorist attacks and told Americans that any retribution against Muslim Americans would not stand.
The Orlando terrorist may be dead, but the virus that poisoned his mind remains very much alive. And we must attack it with clear eyes, steady hands, unwavering determination, and pride in our country and our values.
Let's talk more about these competing speeches with national correspondent Jim Malone. Hi, Jim.
This is getting to be a very divisive debate and
Trump was certainly center stage on that. He has basically gone back to his earlier proposal for a ban on all non-American Muslims coming into the U.S., at least a temporary ban, and he's reiterating that now. And he's also calling out not only Hillary Clinton, but President Obama, both of them, he says, supporting policies that have basically enabled the terrorists to come into the U.S. and wreak havoc.
Really coming down hard on the president and Hillary Clinton for not calling it radical Islamic terrorism. Do you think that ultimately that's something they should have done, or are they walking a fine line here, trying not to offend people that don't want their religion associated with terrorism?
Trump is really hammering at this issue, and he's trying to make it a sort of major side point of the conversation right now. This has been a long time in the making in terms of President Obama. Now, Hillary Clinton was on CNN and basically said, I don't have a problem using those terms, or radical jihad, or radical Islam. In fact, in her speech in Cleveland, she did refer to radical jihad. But Clinton, like President Obama, also does not want to offend the Muslim community. She went to great lengths in her Cleveland speech to talk about how law enforcement needs to be able to reach out to the Muslim community in the U.S. To help them with this situation, not alienate them. Trump has a stronger, much different line. His idea is the Muslim community in the U.S. should be made to help law enforcement sort of ferret out or rat out people in the community whom they know are radicalized. This is a far different approach. So this debate is really, they're on polar opposites right now. And by the way, look at this as a preview of the coming general election campaign. This is going to really get down and nasty, as we've been predicting for weeks.
Is there any indication that we are seeing any sort of reaction from the American public regarding these very polar opposite approaches?
Not so much yet. I will say that when these terrorist actions occur, there's often a spike, sometimes delayed, in public opinion polls that shows the issue has greater resonance, greater importance. I wouldn't be surprised to see that. And although the polls give Hillary Clinton a big advantage in terms of overall handling of foreign policy compared to Donald Trump, in some surveys, Trump does well in terms of this specific question, who would better handle the threat from Islamic State? So we'll have to see how this plays out. I think we're getting a very big preview of the election campaign to come.
All right. Thanks so much, Jim.
Thank you.
Well, meanwhile, at a makeshift memorial about a mile from the site of the tragedy, people broke down in tears and held their hands to their faces while passing through a growing collection of flowers, candles, and cards. The tragedy hit the city's gay and Hispanic communities especially hard. It was Latino night at the club when the attack occurred. They're in deep mourning over a bloodbath at a place where they thought they were safe to be themselves. Joining me now is gay rights activist Randy Ross, who lives in Orlando. Randy, thanks for being here. I understand that where you are now, actually, there are thousands gathering for a vigil.
I live literally a mile away from the nightclub in downtown Orlando where this all occurred. I woke up yesterday morning to my phone blowing up and the sound of helicopters, as we're hearing today, you know, near my home. And, you know, Orlando is the kind of community where that when there is tragedy, no matter what is a problem for our city, we all come together. And this is a sad situation, watching all these folks come together. You don't know if they knew somebody. You don't know why they're here necessarily. We are surrounded by men, women, children, young and old, of all races, probably most likely all of different sexual orientations here, because this is a horrible tragedy that has taken place in our city. And, you know, the reality is now we're learning that this gentleman was, because of the pings on his phone, was collectively looking for a target, and he found it in a very vulnerable place. And now we have so many people having to come together to try to make a sense of it.
The fact that this happened at a place where the LGBT community usually are able to come together without judgment and just celebrate who they are without that judgment must sting very deeply.
What I'm witnessing, and I've listened to, you know, as a person involved in the community, listened to so many political officials over the last few days, and our governor was here, our lieutenant governor, people that actually even oppose same-sex marriage on a very broad space have come together to recognize that when you step on the dance floor, you know, it should not be your last dance.
Should the gay community or the LGBT community be afraid at this point?
I think they should be cautious. The fact that it hasn't happened sooner is probably more surprising to me than the fact that it happened in Orlando. We should be concerned, as I even talked to you, as I walked here tonight with my good friend who's an ally and a straight person who's an artist in our community. We talked about that on the way in. We are a little afraid to be here tonight. You know, a lot of people coming and congregating could be a target as well. You never know. You just don't know. What you can't do is you cannot hide in fear.
And, of course, June is Pride Month, a time for folks to really celebrate progress, acceptance, love, equality. The fact that this happened during Pride Month, does that make this whole situation hurt that much more?
I think of the fact that it touched so many lives that weren't even LGBT. You have to understand, not everybody that was in that club was gay. I happen to know the owners. They own other businesses in this town. They are a straight, married couple, very supportive of our community. We are coming together. As I look around and I see, you know, so many different people, the races are no longer an issue, the orientation, sexual orientation, not an issue, their gender, not an issue. The issue is just a sheer sadness that this occurred and it wasn't supposed to happen here. It shouldn't have happened here.
Tell me a little bit about the gay community there. It sounds to me like it's a pretty close-knit community where most people know each other.
Not only do they not just know each other, you got to remember that this is a service industry environment.
I take it you may have known some of the victims?
I did. I knew a couple of them, and I certainly don't want to get into that out of disrespect for their family. And I spent some time, of course, almost all day yesterday just waiting to hear the name because, you know, not only were we at bay, but certainly their families. I mean, literally last night I walked to the Beardoff Senior Center, which is where the families were being updated on whether their family member was dead or wounded in a hospital. Think about the environment. The folks were dancing and having a good time. You know, their phones, as I understand it, their phones were going off while they were sitting there in pools of blood. I mean, this is not what we think about when we think of America. We don't think about this type of horrendous tragedy. And, you know, when I woke up and started seeing all those different posts and people commenting and saying, are you okay and you're okay, not everybody that's gay goes and hangs out at the club every night. That our communities, they don't realize how close-knit this Orlando community is. When I'm looking around and seeing all these people, this is a sad day for Orlando, and it will not go away soon.
Do you think that the Pulse nightclub will reopen, and should it reopen?
I say this to you with a heavy heart. I would hope they don't open that building. I would hope that they would tear that building down and build something even better. I personally would not want to go dance on the same dance floor where people lied in pools of blood. I mean, if you look at the pictures that have been posted, you will see holes where the Bobcats had to knock holes in order to get in to basically tame the situation. You have to wonder if people would even want to be dancing on the same dance floor where people laid in carnage.
Our sincere condolences to you and the entire community there in Orlando.
I appreciate it. The reality of the situation is our city is, like every city in America, we're very resilient. We will rebuild. We will figure out a way through this.
International Edition continues now with a look at finance. On Wall Street, the Dow closed down 132 points. Markets reporter Jill Malandrino is with us. Jill, were the markets down because of the terror attack in Orlando?
It is impacting the markets from a certain extent because anytime you have uncertainty added into the market, that is going to create some anxiety, especially since this conversation is around terrorism. Outside of Orlando, I think we still would have seen the markets down for the third day in a row because there's a lot of major catalysts on the horizon. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve will decide on an interest rate hike, but most importantly, Brexit, or the UK referendum vote on June 23rd to leave the European Union, is really what is weighing heavily on global averages. Most of the lead down is in the tech and energy space, but I think those two catalysts, our interest rate hike and the Brexit vote, are really what's lending to volatility in the markets today.
And I understand we have some news about Apple and Microsoft today.
Yeah, this morning a major acquisition was announced that Microsoft is buying LinkedIn for $196 per share in cash, or just about $26 billion. Now, this is nearly a 50% premium from Friday's closing price. Analysts say it's a big way for Microsoft to gain access to data that shows what LinkedIn users are doing in the enterprise space, and also to explain cloud services. Also this week, the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference is taking place now through Thursday, and it's a major event that occurs each year, the first day being the most important day because that's when CEO Tim Cook delivers the keynote and announces some major product and software changes. So this year, they announced a new messaging app and improvements to Maps. Siri Voice Assistant will now be coming to iPhone and iPad. There's also a new version of mobile software, iOS 10, that's going to be available for free this fall for all versions of the iPhone going as far back as the iPhone 5. Other updates include what can be done from the lock screen, and they're also making enhancements to the 3D feature as other apps are starting to employ that technology.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Find us anytime at voanews.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. You can follow me at Lori London. Thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Charles Hall. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During a recent visit to the Afar region, United States Ambassador to Ethiopia, Patricia Haslak, had an opportunity to evaluate the efficacy of U.S. government-supported response to the severe drought affecting much of Ethiopia. Ambassador Haslak and Ethiopia's Minister of Tourism and Culture, Aisha Mohammed, first visited a rural school in Mile Worada district that receives nutritional support from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The McGovern Dole School Feeding Program, as it is formally known, provides a nutritious mid-morning meal to 91,000 primary-age students in Afar, who often arrive to school hungry. This regular meal promotes increased attendance and leads to improved academic performance. The ambassador later visited a USAID-supported water rehabilitation project serving 300 households in Mile Worada. The project, which has been replicated in various regions around the country, helped revitalize an unused water source with the installation of a gasoline-run generator and piping systems, construction of a reservoir, tap stand, and cattle trough. Now this small community has access to safe, clean water and doesn't need to relocate. Finally, Ambassador Haslak visited an emergency operations center in the regional capital of Semera to discuss the response of federal and regional authorities and their international partners to the drought and the more recent flooding in Afar. Ambassador Haslak met with Shiyum Awal, the regional president of Afar, to discuss U.S. response to the drought and current conditions. She also emphasized the importance of both the private sector and non-traditional partners in developing the water supply sector. The United States is proud to partner with Ethiopia to mitigate the impact of the drought. Nonetheless, the next several months will be difficult. The rains have come, but it takes time from rain to grain. After several failed growing seasons, millions will be wholly dependent upon food assistance until the autumn harvest. Health resources will also be stretched as vulnerability to diseases increases when people are in a weakened state. Ethiopia has done a commendable job in weathering this drought so far. Development gains have provided the country with greater resilience than ever, and the government and international community reacted quickly and robustly. However, there is still some way to go before victory can be declared.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is for